Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
I'm Tony. This is Elliot. Welcome to BZ Cannabis Hour.
Yeah, this is everybody's favorite hour of the week. We are taking this over for 2 o'clock. Will be the new 420.
That's a takeover, man.
it's an exciting day. Honestly, this is a global hour. We're experiencing so many different markets from our guests today. Our first one is based in Florida. Our second one has Canadian and Australian ties.
Our third one
is in the UK. We're going to go all around the world today.
Yeah, we're not local. We're global, man. We're the real deal.
Absolutely, that's true. Benzinga is pushing its global limits recently. If you all didn't know, we're live in Italy. We're live in Latin America. I think we're going to be live in Spain soon.
All right.
Tony, am I missing any markets?
I don't know. Well, let's tell our listeners where we are. I'm here in Manhattan, right on the east side near the UN, East 44th Street. Where are you, Elliot?
I am in Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh. I'm normally an Upper West Sider, so I'm normally like maybe a 20-minute drive from you. But
A good day.
on a good day is right. not like 4 trains away from you. You would think, with New York not being that far away, we'd have like maybe one straight shot across town.
Right.
No, definitely not. This is your first time hosting, man. Tell us about you a little bit.
Tell them about me?
Yeah.
I hate that. No, okay. Why not? I can tell you everything. What would you like to know? I have a wonderful wife named Tess. She's in the other room with our little puppy.
His name is Ernie.
Yeah, Tony and Tess. We have Ernie. We got a puppy during quarantine. It made the shelter in place process a hell of a lot easier.
I love that. What type of dog?
It's a Cavapoo.
I have no idea.
He's a Cavapoo. Cavapoo is a half King Charles Cavalier, half toy poodle. And he's very smart. He can give us paw and he speaks and he stays, but he does not know how to poop in the litter box yet. So we can't take him outside. So we got this little litter box.
Well,
and he's a genius in one respect, but a bit of a dummy in the other, but we love him dearly.
Yeah, I got my dog at 6 months, and I don't know where I got he from, she became pee pad trained.
It's a social construct.
Yeah, I know, right? Which is good and bad, you know, hard to untrain them there. Anyway, we're excited for this hour. I'm pumped to be here with Tony. Tony's a pro. His knowledge of the space, and he's one of our editors here at Benzinga. So I think we're going to get an all-encompassing perspective of at least our organization when we talk to these wonderful guests.
Yeah.
So, Tony, you know, we have a couple guests here, but I would love to get your perspective of cannabis right now. I mean, you know, it's such a broad question.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to consider. Basically, I gauge my thoughts on this on the genius of my colleagues. So they're feeding me stories every day, some breaking news, well, a lot of breaking news, but some are long-form features. One thing that I'm particularly interested about and talking about today is just the hiring that's going on. So we're in a moment in time when jobs are on everybody's mind, okay? Unemployment rate level was up. Then it went down to 11%, I think, right now. I could be wrong. Somebody could fact check me on that. But still very, very devastating to a lot of people out there. And they want to know who's hiring and whether or not they might be able to get a job in this awesome industry that I have the pleasure of covering. So I'm very excited to learn a little bit about that. I know that there are some issues on the hiring. I know a lot of companies were furloughing employees, but luckily a lot of them brought back employees. Like I just got done interviewing Nancy, the CEO over at Wana Brands.
Yep.
And she told me that they unfortunately had to furlough employees, but they brought them back. And so the business is on the up, right? So now we got to find out just who's doing the hiring and whether or not folks who are interested in it on the investment end, but also on the end of their possibly their careers. Their careers, maybe they want to change and pivot because the economy is so shoddy right now that maybe they want to look to the cannabis industry and edibles and CBD and consider maybe a switch or a pivot in their professional lives, so that's where Benzinga, I think, could really come in handy and show you just which companies are the best, who the players are and the movers and shakers. And so I'm excited to talk about that today.
Yeah. I mean, our first guest is absolutely perfect to discuss that.
That's a good lead in, right?
That is a wonderful lead in. While we bring Brian over here, he is the co-founder of the executive recruiting firm and consultancy Hunter and Esquire. Also the co-founder of The Gig.
That's two G's there.
Yeah, that is two G's. And all caps, G-I-G-G, a staffing agency, which exclusively serves the cannabis industry. So he'll have some incredible insights, I think, not only from the institutional side, but also from the talent side. I'm incredibly interested to hear what he looks for in the cannabis industry. So once Brian gets his video and microphone going here, we'll definitely hop into it. We do have a wonderfully fun announcement today that it is somebody's birthday.
Today it's your birthday. Gonna have a good time.
Happy birthday, guys. Man. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot for the song. not the first time.
I'm sorry for that song. I don't really have a good singing voice, so I apologize.
Oh, not bad.
We're going to record Happy Birthday, and I think that's going to be the entrance music for you on the podcast later. So just get ready for that. It's going to be Tony and I in perfect harmony.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Thanks.
Well, how are you, man? How is it going over there in Florida?
So yes, speaking to you from the belly of the COVID beast here. It's a little bit rough. We are sheltering in place, hardcore. Happy to report our team, our family, everyone in our circle is feeling well. So other than that, it's monsoon season in Miami. So, you know.
So on this momentous day, I have prepared some facts for you, Brian. okay. Some of which you may have known, but just a little more history and education about your special day.
Okay.
So, famous people that you share a birthday with. Cy Young, that's cool. Woody Harrelson, also cool. Like, super.
Also a cannabis advocate.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Maybe we should get him on a cannabis hour. We'll bring Brian back for that one.
Please do.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, R.I.P.
Allison Hoffman. Post,
Daniel Radcliffe, and my personal favorite, Monica Lewinsky. You know, a wonderful day of birthdays today for Cannabis Hour. Now, did you find any others, Tony, or were those the main ones?
Wait a minute, I got the list right here. Oh, Marlon Wayans. Did we say Marlon?
I did not say Marlon. Man, this is a day for champions.
Yeah, Charisma Carpenter. Remember Charisma from Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
You know, I didn't. I'm not going to.
All right, I'm a geek that way. I'm sorry.
Last but not least, just a couple more facts, then we're going to jump into your knowledge about cannabis, Brian, I promise.
Yeah, because we can't stall much longer.
Napoleon captured Alexandria, Egypt today in 1798. And the most important thing I will say all day, on this day in 2010, One Direction was formed during the X Factor show.
So, wow.
That's the best.
The show's over.
Amazing.
Done. awesome. Brian, tell us about you. Tell us about your journey into cannabis. Tell us about how we got to where we are with Hunter and Esquire.
Yeah, certainly. First off, though, happy birthday, Woody. Gosh, it's an American treasure right there. Hey, look, guys, thanks for having me. Happy to be here. I will say, probably speaking on behalf of many, the Patrick Jason comedy hour is missed, but you guys so far are giving off a great vibe. So,
thank you.
Hey, that's the B team, man. You're with the A team right now.
Yeah, we're the ringers.
I just didn't bring my cigar.
Oh boy. My cannabis journey began quite some time ago. And, you know, our search firms have been around since 2017 and really honestly feel blessed. I feel like just about everything I did professionally for sure, personally was sort of training for serving this industry. 15 years of recruitment, starting out my career right out of college, recruiting for medical device and biotech and pharmaceutical companies under, you know, real pressure cooker situations where real lives were at stake, be it a novel artificial pancreas company or company pursuing an NDA or, you know, a big company in trouble with FDA. These were really difficult searches that we executed for 15 years. And then I spent a few years in food and beverage, consumer packaged goods, recruitment, a lot of work on the adult beverage side. This was always based in Miami, recruiting all over the world for those companies and those industries. So I think that the networks and the know-how that we built recruiting in those very compliance-oriented industries and those pressure cooker scenarios trained us well, because we know how difficult this cannabis industry is to navigate. Everyone's living in a pressure cooker situation, and really one bad hire can bring down the whole house. So we've applied that rigor to recruiting for this industry.
Yeah. I hope I'm not that bad hire for Benzinga. Jeez, one bad hire can bring down the house? Wow.
Oh, man. So Brian, you work with your wife, right? That's cool. That's something that I think we all aspire to, is working with our loved ones, or we don't aspire to that.
Yeah.
You do you.
we did train for that as well. Lots and lots of curveballs in the Passman family past leading up to it. So we are battle tested. Yes, my wife Jessica is the Esquire in Hunter and Esquire. And
oh, cool.
she Yeah, very cool. She's a lawyer. She gets the credit. Her entrepreneurial mindset that, say, inspired me over the edge to agree to do this thing, particularly her offer to handle all of the back of the house management, covering contract review and leading our research team and everything else administrative that I fully reject physically and emotionally. Mm. So here we are.
Now, are you guys able to like turn it off like at the end of the day, or do you find that it's like, it's hard to like shake it off and talk about, you know, TV or movies or stuff when you're having dinner and whatnot?
No, we rarely turn it off. We're talking about the industry over dinner, when we wake up, when we go to bed, we have two kids, they're part of the conversation oftentimes. We're all in all the time in this.
That's awesome. I know we have some important topics to get into today. You know, I kind of want to start on the talent side of this, and then we can work our way into the institutional side if that's good with you guys. I'm very interested in the talent, the aspects of a candidate that you look for at Hunter and Esquire that you find attractive to work with yourself, and that you feel comfortable posing to these companies, and you know how that translates to the companies as well. But I'm really interested to start from the talent perspective.
From the talent perspective, in what regard?
In regards to, you know, what do you look for, in an executive these days?
Yeah, well, so let's go back to the battle-tested statement. I mean, that's really a big deal, and we vet well beyond paper. So that begins with what have you done? And that's a big focus on things that you've innovated, that you've built, that you've created. So we believe there are really two kinds of leaders. There's creators and there's maintainers. And our belief is that the cannabis industry needs as many creators as possible. So first off, we're talking about, what wars have you fought? What really special things have you accomplished in your career? We also look for some essential traits like adaptability. So we qualify that by walking through the person's background and looking at how they've adapted to new environments, to new process, to change, to not only changing companies, but changing industries and succeeding in different cultures and different sectors of the economy. We look for how they treat our process, which is pretty rigorous. We throw a lot of curveballs at talent. We challenge them a lot on their why.
What's the idea of give us an idea of what a curveball would be.
We sort of, and this is a little bit of our secret sauce, but to the talent out there, if you're going through the interview process with us or with another cannabis search from a cannabis company, you're going to be asked to pivot a lot in terms of rescheduling a meeting and moving quickly to a Zoom video instead of a good old-fashioned phone call. And probably being asked numerous times, why are you interested? Why? And I know we've done it before, but let's talk again about why this interests you or why you think you're right. And asking really some personal questions about, your circle of friends and family and other loved ones who might influence the decision to hitch your career brand up to an industry that's currently under federal prohibition.
So is that a big issue in interviews? It's like the regulatory side?
It's come up a small percentage of the time, it does come up. Rewind a few years when we started, I'd say it was, I'm going to guess maybe 5 to 10% of the pushback that we got. It's a significantly lesser amount now, but it's obviously best to root that out early and often rather than in a later stage. So, it's sometimes a little bit strange for a candidate to hear a recruiter really urging them to go speak to their spouse again about it, their kids and their folks and their pastor or the rabbi or whoever those people might be.
Yeah. And are you looking at across the board at all different industries when you're headhunting? Like what are you looking at tech? Are you looking at retail? What kind of folks with any type of expertise? I mean, because it's such a, you know, it's such a wide industry. I mean, I know that there's folks that are coming in from the, even the supermarket space that are making a difference and leading the way. What types of talent are you looking for in what industries?
Yeah, well, some of it depends on the role, certainly. And we do recruit across all functions. So, you know, if it's a retail VP of, you know, corporate retail ops leader role, then, you know, historically for us, we've brought a lot of retail leaders in from traditional brick and mortar, from, you know, your Starbucks and your Targets and whatnot. We have a lot of large medical marijuana clients, and we pull from our networks in the life sciences and healthcare sectors. But, you know, there are some MSOs we've helped hire leaders out of IT. And there's, you know, there's a friend of mine who's a phenomenal CEO out west for a vertically integrated company in California, and his entire background is in software as a service. Mm. And, you know, at first it's sort of like, well, how does that work? But the reality is software as a service space is a constant, you know, pivot. It's just that you're only as good as your last game, and, you know, the rules and the goalposts are always changing. And that's a good similarity right there. So it's always thinking on your toes and being able to move and pivot and bounce back when you get knocked down.
Yeah.
Super interesting. So what limitations do you have when you recruit? Like is it just domestically? Do you look everywhere? Internationally, do you look in Canada? Where are you finding your executives mostly?
Well, so we have no limitations. We recruit on any and all things within the cannabis economy. We have clients that are bulk wholesalers, that are ingredients producers, vertically integrated, SaaS providers, you name it, all functions, all levels. So, you know, thanks for the introduction. So, you know, discerning Hunter and Esquire is retained executive search. The gig handles staffing, so that's kind of manager level and down. And then we did recently establish a new alliance with the group out in California that can help us deliver some contract staffing solutions to companies in this kind of new gig-ish economy where, you know, there's some lack of clarity of what's exactly on the horizon. So yes, cannabis companies are getting back to a lot more hiring, and we could talk more about the how that's looking, but leading into that is that there's some more, you know, desire for contract talent, because it's the realization that we have an essential need for a finance or marketing or whatever it may be person, but we don't want to commit to that big salary even though we need it. So really we're a whole talent solutions provider for the cannabis economy, and we did recently expand to serve the psychedelic space as well.
Oh, interesting.
Super cool. So let's jump into that. Let's jump into what everybody's waiting for right now is, how are you recruiting? How have you seen the trend shift from January to now? Are you seeing waves? We'd love to hear your insights on that.
Sure. So January still felt good, even though we were still reeling from the capital crunch that hit in 19, but things were still kind of moving along. Certainly, as we all know, things grinded to a pretty good halt in March. So that was not a complete cease on hiring. What we watched through March, April, and May and supported were a lot of frontline hires. There were still just hundreds and hundreds of hires being executed on the front lines, and some select hires being executed at the executive level. We had some clients that actually enjoyed a 2 to 3x increase in revenue throughout March, April, May, and June. So that was that experience. You know, things did come back pretty strong for us about a month ago on executive search. The focus there has been very heavily on the sales and business development revenue generating roles. Those have been deemed definitely essential, as well as some of your other obvious essential roles in general ops leadership and finance. Probably the biggest change to note for our first 2+ years, we brought a lot of chief marketing officers and marketing leadership and CFOs and other finance leadership in the industry. And I'd say that the probably the biggest hurt is for the marketing talent that's been exited from the industry or mainstream talent looking to get in. That's really been in our experience from where we're sitting the biggest gap in terms of a return to hiring. There's a lot of good marketing talent sidelined right now, and cannabis companies are largely kind of taking a break, it feels like, from the very large spends on the brand building efforts and focusing more on some of those essential roles and being a little bit more calculated in their spends and those leaders that they hire, which is not a bad thing for them, of course.
Right.
So the outlook is good. Are more companies are hiring? And if so, which ones come to mind?
All the companies are hiring. I mean, this is good news to people watching. Cannabis companies are hiring. Your vertically integrated MSOs, your testing labs, your wholesale producers, everyone is hiring. I think, again, really, there's just a pullback on the frenzy of hiring that we saw leading up to earlier this year. And, you know, companies had a chance to spend the downtime during the pandemic, thinking about their needs, looking at their org charts, you know, furloughing employees, figuring out how they can get by with less. There was a lot of hiring done against what we think we'll need. And so now the hiring's more focused on what exactly we need and what fits for us today.
That's awesome, Brian. So I guess, what's the retention like nowadays? I mean, are you seeing, I know you're awesome, Brian. Don't get me wrong. but retention.
We'll say it. Keep saying it, actually.
Yeah, you're okay. The retention rate. I'd love to just chat about, I mean, obviously, like, it's maybe too early to chat about post-COVID numbers, but how have you seen the cannabis industry improve? If you have.
Well, yeah, what are they getting right?
Yeah, well, I think cannabis companies have gotten a lot right on the hiring front in terms of upping the ante on going out and getting some good pedigree. And so I do want to acknowledge that pedigree is important. It's though it shouldn't be the end all be all, certainly years of hands-on experience should count. But, you know, if you can get someone who has an MBA or some other, you know, great education layered on top of that, all the better. And if they've worked in a blue chip world-class company environment, great. But it shouldn't be all about that. So cannabis companies, I think, did great over the recent years, graduating very much so from the very friends and family focused way of hiring to that hiring. But I think that there's now a next evolution, which is going beyond just the pedigree to really then dig into the stuff we talked about a few moments ago. Okay, great, you got all this pedigree, but now let's talk about what actually you've gotten done in these environments and pull back from chasing the shiny objects that look great on a press release and your website because of just the pedigree, and focus on some of the other below the surface stuff.
That's awesome. Brian, if you can leave us with one thought, what would it be?
Gosh, I love the plant and I love people. This industry is about the plant and the people. They cannot survive without each other. Well, I mean, let's say the plant would probably flourish without us on this earth. So maybe I take that back. But what I want to leave everyone with is, look, let's treat each other great. We love people here. We love being in the people business. It pains us to see people take their talents to the cannabis industry and then, you know, be abused. The retention in this industry is pretty low. It's terribly low. And a lot of that comes from just poor planning in terms of how you're building your leadership team and thinking about how everyone fits culturally and aligns with the mission and the vision. So I think a greater focus on just being aware of what our mission and our vision is. Let's hire in alignment and get our stakeholders on the same page in what we're trying to get done, because we're talking about people's lives here. I think that'll be great, because there's a lot of talent right now that came into the industry, gave it their blood and their sweat, and they were exited from the industry and they're thinking right now, do I want to come back in? Because it didn't feel like I hoped it would feel. It was, there are terrible company cultures out there that are abusing their employees. There's leaders that are frazzled. They're turning abusive or absent. And I think that if we think more about the fact that we're dealing with people and their lives and their families and their livelihoods, and be more calculated about, should we bring this person in and ask them to be a part of this? Does it make sense for them as well? Then we'll be a lot better off. So I would like to leave everyone just with a greater focus on the people and caring more for those that are bringing their talents to the industry, because we need it, and they want to be a part of it. So let's just embrace them and make them feel good about it, not regret the decision, and exit and run for the hills.
Now, you talked a little bit about mission and vision. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we have a feature coming out. My colleague, Andrew Ward, talked a lot about diversity and the need for diversity in the industry. And a lot of the feedback that he got was that the cannabis industry just isn't diverse enough. When you talk to these companies doing the hiring, is that part of their mission? Are we going on in the right direction with that? Because it seems like, you know, at least pre-COVID, it wasn't going in that direction.
Yeah, look, totally agree. I mean, that's the ultimate. And we could get to a properly diversified workforce in the cannabis industry to create more healthy friction and diversified ways of thinking and solving problems, then we'll be in a really good place. So the good news is the majority of our clients, they are asking for diverse hires, which is phenomenal. We're moving in a good direction. Andrew Ward is a smart guy, spot on with that we have room to grow. You mentioned Nancy Whiteman earlier in this. We're collaborating with her on building out a really cool toolkit for the industry that will support that initiative. That's a lot of fun. I hope that is talked about a bunch. I'm sure it will be. I'm excited about that. So yeah, lots and lots of room to grow, but the industry is aware, and the key leaders like Nancy out there, they're aware and they're putting a lot of effort forth. So I think that we'll see that change in a hurry.
And there you have it.
Thank you so much, man. As I said before, wealth of knowledge. I look forward to continuing this conversation soon. Everybody, please check out Hunter and Esquire. Brian, do you have a website?
It is hunteresquire.com.
Hunteresquire.com. Perfect. Brian, happy birthday. Go celebrate. Yeah. Do what you do on your birthday, man. Don't do anything I wouldn't.
Oh, man. I can't.
Don't talk about work so much.
We're going to wrap up early today around 4:20.
All right. Hey. Excellent.
Thanks, guys. Really right, appreciate it.
Take it easy, Brian.
All right.
Wow, there we go, Elliot.
Yeah, great.
That's one down.
I mean, it's so topical what he does right now.
Yeah, especially now.
Bringing people, the social reform that's taking place that he attacks head on. He has to. So it's an incredible time to have this conversation with him. Tony, who do we got next, man?
Oh boy, on deck is Pat McClutchin. He is the CEO and chairman of MetaPharm Labs. I had the pleasure of interviewing his co-founder, Keith, in a fireside chat at one of our awesome Benzinga events not too long ago.
Really?
Cool. Yeah. But Pat here, he is quite the veteran. He has a 15-year career in the pharmaceutical space. He most recently worked at Janssen Pharmaceuticals. It's a unit of Johnson & Johnson. He led the hospital division for renal and mental health products. Pat's foresight in creating a business that focuses on advanced cannabis concentrates bodes well for medical research, investors, and consumers alike. You can tell I've prepared my notes.
No, that was memorized, right?
No, I'm like Marlon Brando. I have cue cards placed everywhere.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Well, while we bring him over, MetaPharm Labs is an incredibly cool Canadian company.
Yes.
They have led the way in so many efforts, and I'm really excited to get Pat's take on it, because, I mean, this is really partially, or not, if not all, his vision.
You know?
So I'm sure Keith has something to say about what I just said.
Yeah. MetaPharm is always in the news. So it's like, they're like always popping up on our feeds. And so I'm really happy to just have the man behind the company with us today. And there he is.
I love it. I have to start by saying you said McClutchin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I am clutch though. So this is a clutch shift right here. in the first gear, and then we'll go straight into fifth.
I knew it was McCutcheon. I'm nervous. Yeah, I'm camera shy. I'm a shy guy.
Yeah, no problem.
This is Tony's last chance with Benzinga.
Yeah, so this is it. It was over before it began.
Yeah, great.
Good to see
how are you guys doing today?
Good, man. It's a rainy Thursday here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Doing well, man. Tony's hanging out in Manhattan. You are in Toronto?
I'm in front of my lab. Can you see this right now?
That is
the background.
That is awesome.
I'm in our boardroom, actually. This is actually just literally what's in front of our boardroom. So
you might want to check on that guy behind you. He's
I know. He's not working hard. he's been stuck like that for a while.
It's like the Tin Man.
Matt, let's jump right into it, man. I want to get all the knowledge from you we can, right?
Yeah.
Who are you? Like, where did you go? Tell us about your journey, man.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And I usually start there. I will start maybe just capturing one of the last comments. I can't say it was all my vision by any means. Definitely Keith would, Keith, he's such a nice guy. He'd probably snicker at that and not say anything, but it was absolutely our combined vision. We've used a lot of our complementary skill sets to build this. It seems like it was years ago now, to be honest, since where we've come. And I used to have way more hair at that time. Like, my widow's peak has just gone crazy since that point. But so I've got a biology degree from Western to start. I spent just over 15 years in pharmaceutical sales and marketing. I started with a company called AstraZeneca, which is a German company based in Canada. Then I moved over to Sanofi Aventis, where I led the national hospital platform. And then I was taken over to Janssen, as you commented on, J&J. And we've used a ton of the learnings, the culture, and the way that J&J has been positioned in terms of how they look at their people and how they look at their business model, that being one of the strongest pharmaceutical business models. And then we literally use that as a platform to build MediPharm Labs.
That's great. So, you know, jumping into that a little bit, you know, going back to the word vision, right? It seems like you come from a place of wellness. You come from a place of taking care of people, you know? So where did MediPharm Labs, you know, how did you and, you know, your co-founders, you know, come to the idea that, hey, let's talk about concentrates?
Yeah, so I definitely, and I don't get to get into this too much in some of our investor presentations, but in terms of the background, but I've got a ton of respect for the plant. I have a ton of respect for how this plant can actually change the pharmaceutical distribution and patient therapeutic options and incredible reductions of costs. And so as much as I have respect for the plant, and I've known a ton of growers, and we did a great job of networking the industry at first, because we were in essence like the first company that was Switzerland. So since we didn't cultivate, everyone felt early on in the industry that they were comfortable letting us in and seeing their proprietary grow methodology or all of their secrets, because we were the extraction guys. And so the reason for the extraction piece and sticking to our value segment on the chain was because we had a ton of skills in pharmaceutical sales and marketing. Keith comes from a really dynamic background in business development and politics and understanding how you move products through procurement and hospitals. And so instead of looking at a full vertically integrated project or company, we felt that we didn't have all of the skills, and we couldn't do anything. We couldn't do all of those things well, just like you can't do everything well in a marriage or a relationship. Why could you ever do everything well in a company? So we picked our spot and we executed on a strategic laser focused strategy.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't tell Brian. He works with his wife, our last.
Don't tell my wife either, because I'm perfect in our marriage. What are you talking about? Yeah,
we got you there. I know Tony wants to jump into Australia. Real quick, I want to start with Canada. So I'm going to hijack you real quick. Can you talk about the difficulties, the struggles, the benefits of how you all have grown in the Canadian market and where you see it going in the near future?
Yeah, I'll start with the positive champagne moments of our company's life and maturity. coming in the scene as license number 95, being profitable out of the gates, signing our first deal with Canopy. Our first half quarter, we did just over $10 million in sales. We executed on our first year of just over $130 million in sales. And then we've run into some challenges because industry changes and changes momentum of such a young industry moving so quickly and a regulatory moving so quickly as Health Canada has been kind of the trailblazer of the world for cannabis and has had to be very careful about how they've supported and evolved an industry. Basically, we came out of the gates, and we utilized a lot of classic pharmaceutical strategic negotiation strategies, and we supported our partners and our ongoing kind of strategy to prepare for a massive launch of cannabis 2.0 products. And as much as it's been a challenge because of the slower rollout with distribution, I think there's great opportunity, and we're now seeing that distribution is starting to open up. We're seeing a lot more stores in Ontario. We're now seeing a lot more of a diversity of products. We're seeing the reduction of the illicit markets, which has always been the major challenge that that Health Canada tried to kind of position in to start. And I think we're doing a better job now, but I can't necessarily say that this has been done without mistakes from all the different perspectives of how the regulatory has evolved, but we all have to work together. And the fact that the cannabis consumer and patients need is not going away. It in fact is going up actually at an incredible rate now. And especially, I hate to use this word and this term, but because of COVID as well, this gives a great opportunity. And I think it's a very important segment of required businesses and new medical options.
The illicit market is the struggle for everybody, my friend.
Yes, they're doing pretty well.
It is the next obstacle for the U.S. before federal legalization, and it will be the first obstacle after.
Absolutely, and it's trailblazing, right? That's what you have to do. As new federal regulators look at these options, you have to face into the headwinds like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Tony, let's dive into Australia, man.
Wow. Australia.
I was Twitter stalking MetaPharm today. There was a first sales milestone in Australia. What does that mean? And tell us about it. I mean, I'm curious to know. Keith and I talked a lot about it, the process of expanding in Australia. First, why Australia? And what does this milestone mean?
Yeah, flat off. Australia is beautiful. What do you mean? Should I need to say anything else? No, it's Australia. The regulatory, the TGA, the Therapeutics Goods Association in Australia, is very similar to the Health Canada regime. And I don't get into this much either, but literally when we sent in the application for the Australian license, it was so similar that there's a significant element of the application itself where you just had to change the word out between Health Canada and Australia. So that's the real truth of that element. So quick and efficient kind of regulatory acceleration and relationships. But the fact of the matter is the number of patients the growth of the number of patients in Australia has moved faster than almost any other jurisdiction in the world. So the opportunity to distribute our products to the Australian nationals is fantastic. And it's a great jump off point into all of the Southern Pacific and then actually as a backdoor into Europe, which you'll probably ask about in kind of later questions.
That's fantastic. I want to chat real quick about the ever most misunderstood word in cannabis, which is brand, the MetaPharm brand. Can you chat a little bit about your decision to launch that, and what it's meant for you?
Yeah, we get this question a lot, and we get the question a lot in the same breath as, how are you doing and working with contract manufacturing partners and white label partners as well as and launching your own brands? And I kind of start with the fact that Costco, in fact, does quite well at this strategy. And there's a number of examples that we can look at where a high quality manufacturer can actually execute on their own brand strategy as well as partner strategies. The very simple answer is that our customers ask for it. And so with a number of companies and peers in this space that actually weren't executing quite as well to deliver products at volume and consistently to shoppers, which is one of our most highest kind of respected clients and partners, shoppers asked if we could come out with our own brand because we were so well positioned in terms of our GMP certification and our quality. And so even though the products that are on the shelf right now are three new two CBD products and then a balanced product, CBD 25, CBD 50, and then CBD 25.5, THC 25.5, are all not branded GMP. They are actually made to GMP standard. And our brand strategy is a lot more aligned to the Jameson strategy, where we actually just identify simply the product attributes and we brand the MediPharm Falling Leaf as quality brand. And so it's high quality. It talks about the attributes, which makes it simple for patients and for physicians to understand what they're giving them. And the precision dosing comes from a great high quality company like ourselves that is certified.
Excellent.
Simple as that.
Simple as that, yeah.
Everybody get that?
That's fantastic. So what's the next for you guys? What's 2021 going to look like? You know, where are we going?
Yeah, because we had a difficult first half. How's the second half in 2021?
Yeah, well, we've only released Q1, so it's we haven't gotten there full for the first half yet, but we're excited to push Q2 results August 13th. The 2021 is all about international distribution. Don't get me wrong. We're not going to, and we will never be giving up on our Canadian distribution, our contract manufacturing partners, and the medical and the recreational wellness side. But 2021 is all about moving product between Canada and Australia into Europe, into Latin America, in a ton of different formats, ranging from gel caps, tabs, tinctures, vapables where appropriate in certain regulatory areas. But MediPharm Labs is going to see a significant representation of our revenues being international markets. The total addressable market, as you guys assume and just can see in Canada, is small relative to the world. So as a company that's certified now and is pushing products that are being used in clinical trials, are gaining a lot of momentum with data, and now can be moved and registered in all of these different jurisdictions of the world, that's where we want to be positioned. And we want to be positioned in the healthcare and the pharmaceutical segment of cannabis.
Fantastic. Tony, if you don't have any other questions, Pat, if you could leave us, you know, with thoughts, you know, obviously we've gone through MediPharm pretty extensively here.
Yeah.
But if you leave us with something, you know, about cannabis, about MediPharm, about you, just a thought for this audience.
One of the most exciting things I think that the cannabis investor and the market needs is another major catalyst. And we've seen big alcohol come in. We've seen big tobacco come in. Now we need to see relationships and partnerships with big pharma. We are driven by this vision. We are executing on our vision now. We're excited to show the world that GW Pharma isn't the only company playing in the healthcare and biotech wellness space of the global cannabis-based therapeutic markets. They're going to have another competitor coming on their heels. And so that's what I'm most excited about, bar none.
That's competition awesome. On its way.
On its way.
Pat, it's been a pleasure to chat with you, sir.
Great, guys.
I look forward to continuing this conversation again. Seeing where you all grow, how much you all grow. Obviously, you guys are so far from being done, it's not even funny. So,
how far we extract.
Good luck to all you. MediPharm will be participating in our future events. We'll hit those later, but we're excited to see you there, sir.
Absolutely.
Stay well.
Thanks, guys. Pat. Stay safe.
You too.
Well, thanks. Wow. MediPharm Labs, man, a leader in cannabis. Canada especially, but I think in cannabis, I think that's safe to say.
They're moving. I mean, I love the topic of international expansion because it's so important, especially because a lot of the innovation is taking place overseas. And that was the feedback that I got from talking to Wana Brands, the director of innovation there, Mike Hennessy. And so you can't blame a guy like Pat for looking overseas for growth opportunities and new products and new ways of looking at things, because R&D is just not as advanced here. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
No, and that's what I'm seeing.
We're going to keep diving into this international market scene with our next guest, Peter Shippen, the CEO of Britannia Bud. quite an extensive financial background. So this is going to be very quick, I think, along the lines of who Benzinga is. And I think Peter is going to be a nice cross sector between finance and getting into cannabis. Yeah. Peter, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm a little too close to the camera. I'm trying to adjust here.
I think I keep coming in and out. Yeah.
You guys hear me okay?
Oh, good, man. Very well over here in North Carolina. Tony's holding down the city, though.
At least it's quiet out there. New York is never this quiet.
Peter, well, good to have you.
Great to be here. I'm coming to you live from Toronto, Canada.
All right.
A second Canadian in a row, but there's so much more to you, Peter. I want to hear, let's talk about you first. Let's get in your background. I hyped you up a little bit broadly about your finance background, but I'd love to hear from you about how you got here.
Yeah, so I guess I'm a bit of a reformed asset manager. I started a business just on the eve of the global financial crisis in late 2007, early 2008.
Perfect timing, huh?
Yeah, you know. And truthfully, I started a cannabis business before a meltdown in that sector too. So I'll let you guys draw the correlation. I started a business, grew it up called Redwood Asset Management here in Canada. We sold the business in 2016 to a company called Purpose Investments. I just want to kind of highlight a couple of things. We were early investors in the cannabis space. We saw a lot of different deals over the years, public, private. We were the first actively managed mutual fund to launch specific to cannabis. We were also the first ETF, actively managed ETF to launch focused on cannabis. And my former colleagues at Purpose Investments just recently launched, and I guess it was in January, launched the CBD and wellness ETF in Europe. So my background is very much on the asset management side, but as an entrepreneur, started the business from scratch in a pretty competitive environment, and have seen the cannabis industry grow up from that seat.
Yeah. I mean, jumping in from finance seems, one would think that would be a benefit, but, I think we'll get into that a little bit later about, how that has been effective for you one way or the other. But let's jump in right into Britannia Bud and Britannia Life Sciences. I think you all are an incredibly interesting play. You all have partnerships that I think make you unique. I'd love to just hear about you from the start.
Yeah, so kind of taking you from my asset management background into this, at the end of 2018, myself and the CIO of Purpose Investments, which is the company I was working for at the time, we went to the UK. We're big rugby fans, so we were over there to watch rugby. But we said, why don't we stick around and do some meetings? And we did a handful of meetings each day. And what we wanted to talk about at the end of 2018 was cannabis, because we had a specific cannabis product that we were going to talk about, and other stuff. Mining was big Canadian asset class. Also, if you think back, blockchain was a thing at the time. And what we found by the end of the week was that UK private equity investors, UK family offices, UK high net worth investors, really they were kind of laughing us out of the room. And they were saying that this isn't a real asset class. This isn't investable. And I got to tell you, it felt a lot like Canada did in 2014. I think back to Tweed, which is now Canopy at the time, trying to sell shares and they couldn't give their paper away. And for me, it was just, the light kind of went on and I said, I've got to pursue this. I've got to go after this. And I got to tell you, it's the UK is an emerging market. It's a great market, but it's still very much emerging. So we started I put my hand up in January of 2019 to kind of exit from the role I was in, and started pursuing this UK opportunity. And that's where we are today. I can talk a little bit more about some of the things we put in place, but I guess the thing that I would leave you with is, or kind of just the point I'd like to make is, UK is a great market. It's 66 million people. It is the fifth largest economy in the world. And it's about the size of the state of Michigan. So when you think about for the Canadians out there, that's roughly double the size of Canada. California is a great cannabis market. It's about double the size of California, but it's in a pretty compact land package. So it's a pretty interesting place to be.
How do you get over that initial negative feedback? I mean, what was that like? Because you were one of the first players in the space to, you know, bring it to these investors. These guys have a lot of, you know, powder to play with. How come? And you said you kept the confidence, but how did you maintain that? Because any other investor or entrepreneur, I should say, would have been, you know, quite discouraged.
Yeah, listen, I think there's for any entrepreneur, there's that moment where you kind of you look into the abyss and you say, am I going to keep going here or am I going to turn away? And, you know, at 27, when I started my asset management business and the world was melting down, I decided to keep going. And you know, 13 years later, with a little bit more experience, you know, the idea of quitting just never entered my head. It is a challenge, though, like getting other people up to speed. It from an investment perspective, particularly in the UK, it's been really challenging. We've had a pretty good reception, and I would say that's only happened in the last month from North American investors. During the COVID period, like the real kind of depths of that, very few people wanted to take calls or have a chat about putting new money into a private company. But more recently, there's been a lot more excitement. And I got to tell you, like after 3 months of getting, you know, a lot of, you know, questions, a lot of people not sure about CBD and cannabis and the market, you know, you get two or three calls where guys go, I love your business model. I love your structure. They put so much wind in your sails. And like right now I feel bulletproof. I feel like I can go on for another 2 years just based on our kind of most recent conversations. So it's tough. You know, you're either dealing with, there's always reasons not to invest. And the whole goal is to try and eliminate those reasons for people.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, is that 3 months unique to you? Or do you kind of see a little bit of a more industry-wide excitement?
I mean, certainly, like capital markets would suggest that there's more interest and more excitement in the space. I'm seeing, like, we're seeing more activity. Like more interest in the space. I think the you know, looking at it strictly from an investment standpoint, during that COVID period where stocks were getting smashed, like to invest in a private company when you could buy a public company at really nice or nice valuations, like why would you? But I think we deliver, like what we're bringing to the table is, you know, we're a profitable company. We have great growth avenues ahead of us. And we're in a market where very few people have exposure right now, and where it might not be on everyone's radar screen yet, like the UK, but it is, I think even with the most recent, you know, announcements out of Europe, it is just a jewel of an opportunity. And like, I've never been more excited about this business than I am, you know, sitting right here in front of you guys.
Yeah. That being said, are you on the hunt for any company in particular? Is M&A part of the strategy?
So we're currently in the midst of acquiring a business. Our whole, just a bit of background. The UK is slowly getting their heads around from a regulation perspective, cannabis. Medical cannabis has been legal since 2018. But there has only been about 200 prescriptions granted through the National Health Service. So it's a very, medical cannabis is legal, but it's not accessible. If you play that against the CBD market, which is an incredible growth area, the estimates are around £500 million. So call it $700 million a year of annual turnover in the CBD market. But 95% of that business is imported, and it's imported from Eastern Europe, from areas that don't have great, quality control, I guess. So a year ago, a group did some tests on kind of 50 products. And what they found was that 40% of the products had about 50% or less of the CBD content in it than was listed on the label. And another 40% of products had stuff in it that wasn't in the label. Things like pesticides, alcohol, THC. So it's at that point that I just realized that we need to be the quality. We need to be the cops. We need to be the quality. So right. We had already been in setting up a CBD analytical testing facility. And right now we are fundraising to acquire our partner business, which is a labs company that is a global leader in cosmetics formulations. It started as a regulatory compliance business. They do formulations, testing, global compliance for cosmetics. And now we're scaling into areas like food with vegan ratings, and we can do all kinds of food, into CBD testing. And for anyone who's listening, we have a great solution for novel foods. So for those who are aware of what's going on in Europe to get your CBD edible products approved, novel foods is a challenge that people are trying to get their heads around. And we have been, our partner business, the business we're acquiring a stake in, has been named by the Association for the Cannabinoid Industry in the UK, an industry group, to be a tester and do all the toxicology, analytical work, and all of the work on the novel foods dossiers that they're doing. So we feel like it's a, you know, from a dollar perspective, it's a big industry, but from a standards perspective, it's really challenging. And that's why we're there. And every meeting we have, we've got a great management team, a number of people that I've spent a lot of time with, certainly recently, but people I've known for a lot of years. Our experience spans not just cannabis, but also investment and CPG and pharma. And every meeting, every conversation is about quality. How do we make sure that quality exists in the market? And that's why that's been a big focus of us is to be the people who insist and focus on infusing quality throughout value chains, supply chains, and products.
It's like an ever-present conversation. Standards, quality, regulation, compliance, put it off in the last minute.
Yeah.
I think having seen, you know, it's funny when you venture out into the world, everyone kind of talks about Canada as being the model, Health Canada. But having gone through it and lived with it and seen LPs and different people, like, the Canadian model wasn't perfect, and many would argue it's still kind of challenged, and so. You know, it's frustrating at times to see other people making and other jurisdictions making similar mistakes. But you know, therein lies the opportunity.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead, Peter. I just want to talk about your raise. If you can tell us a little bit more, a few more specifics as to the status, if you're able to tell us, you know, what you're raising. You know, I think it shows that there's so much interest in what you are doing.
Yeah. So what I'll say this is whereas in the UK, the hurdle around fundraising has been around getting people's head around the CBD business. In North America, the real hurdle has been around understanding the UK. You know, we speak the same language. We feel like we know that country well, but that's kind of the major hurdle. And what's been great is we've had an investor group, which includes a couple of prominent cannabis investors we've connected with over the last few weeks. We have some real interest in this fundraise. So I'll speak in kind of like round numbers, but we're raising $11 million. We have about 2/3 of that spoken for as I sit here. We have a lot of investor calls over the next week or so to try and round that out. We're open to other folks to join us on this ride. My background is in capital markets. Our desire is to be public, if not by the end of the year, by the end of the first quarter. So we're at 2/3 raised of 11 million. I think that the thing that is really nice about this business is that we are profitable. We have revenue, we are profitable. And my expectation is that we will do somewhere between $4 and $5 million of earnings in the next 12 months. And that for investors, they would be coming in at what would work out to a single digit PE multiple. So from an investment perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think you get a cracker of a management team. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about the rest of the team are really fantastic. So that's where we're at today. And we continue to have chats and welcome, whether it's funds or high net worth individuals who are interested in coming along.
Hopefully those high net individuals are watching the BZ Cannabis Hour. No, reach out.
I think they probably are. But you know, just to make sure everybody knows, if you want to meet Peter and you don't already have his cell phone number, please feel free to email me, ElliotLane@Benzinga.com, and I'll introduce you.
Thank you, Elliot.
Yeah, of course. Peter, assuming he doesn't complete his raise beforehand, will be presenting on August 18th. So if you are an investor interested in hearing just the in-depth story, you know, even more than what you heard today, that's the place to do it. So Peter, you're a wealth of knowledge, man. You are definitely included in that crack of a management team. And it's great to have you here, sir. We appreciate it. And you stay safe and stay well.
Yeah. And come back when you want to break this news to us. Maybe we can get the, come on, give us a little something when you buy that company, when you're, when you're all the way done fundraising. Can you throw us a bone here?
I'll tweet you guys or something.
Accepted.
I'll do an Insta.
Done. BZ Cannabis as well. Benzinga and BZ Cannabis. But Peter, it's been a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you soon in less than a month.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter. Man.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Tony and I, this is our first time hosting together. I pray it's not our last. Tony, you're an awesome co-host.
Oh, thank you, man. So are you.
Incredible beard.
Well, you know, if we do get brought back again, or if I get brought back again, I'm probably going to be clean shaven. Because wow. This is, we're going to slice this off.
We're going to take a Twitter poll to see if that's what the audience wants.
we'll I know it's what my here. Wife wants, and that's all the opinion okay. that counts.
All right, Tess wins. So, listen, next week, July 31st, is our Benzinga Bootcamp. If you're a retail investor, you should be tuning in. We already have over 25,000 people registered for this one.
Can people still register?
I believe so. Not for free anymore, unfortunately.
Okay.
I believe they can still register. If not, then it is monthly. The end of August will be our next bootcamp. August 18th, our next Cannabis Capital Conference focused on Michigan and the Midwestern states of the cannabis industry. Canopy Growth, Cresco Labs, Ascend Wellness, Last Prisoner Project. It's just going to be incredible content.
Oh, nice.
I think that's not one you're going to want to miss. Also, we will have a deal room associated with the August 18th event where you will see Peter present along with SunPath Technologies. So a lot of things are happening for us. Stay tuned. I believe there is a place where you can put your number and your email on the right side of the screen in the bzcannabishour.com website page. That's where we update you. Please do it. Tony, any words of wisdom before we head out, man?
Just to behave yourselves and wear masks. Let's let's be safe let's out
it.
There.
Let's beat it.
Yes. I want to see you guys in real life. I mean, the wonderful world of Zoom has come in handy during these crazy times, but I want to get back out there mask free. But first, we got to wear that mask.
I want to at least be able to touch elbows.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Aaron. Thanks to the whole Benzinga team. Special thanks to Tony. Hopefully, we'll see you soon.
Take care, man.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say,
It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.